everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2020, and you're listening to episode 186, which is a short pod blast that's part of a special series during the COVID-19 2020 quarantine. On this episode, I'm joined by J. Warner Wallace, who is a speaker, best-selling author, and a former cold case homicide detective featured on the television program Dateline. He is a senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, an adjunct professor of apologetics at Biola University, and a faculty member at Summit Ministries. Jim, it's good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I think this is one of the last podcast interviews I'm going to be doing for a while, just because a lot of the states right now are getting back to quote unquote normal, and that we're slowly opening up in different places all over the country, even though there are some parts of the country, including my state, North Carolina, where we're still continuing to grow. I think we're in the top five states that are having more increased cases, but we're opening up here as well too. So we just want to give some final words of encouragement for our listeners as they've gone through this. And even as states open up, of course, it's kind of a new normal now. Things that we used to do before, we're not exactly doing them the same way. But before we get started, I wanted to ask Jim, what for you has been the easiest and hardest adjustments to being in a quarantine and just kind of this whole new normal that I was talking about?
Well, I think probably the hardest thing is that each of us has got a different experience of the quarantine. And I always look at it this way, as a thought experiment. Let's just say that you had no access. You decided for a year that you weren't going to even listen to social media, to look, go online, to even watch cable news. You're just going to take a break. By coincidence, you're taking the break. Would you have any sense that we're in the middle of a global pandemic? You might, but it would probably depend on where you're living. So if you're living in New York, you probably are more likely to know somebody who's gotten sick with this mysterious flu that is whatever it is. It's this illness that you don't know it's a pandemic because you have no access to media. And I think this is happening if you're in North Dakota, you're thinking, what? Nothing's different, right? Because you don't have any access to anybody. And if somebody does get sick and very sick, you don't even know what it's associated with. It might be that they're sick with the flu. You just don't know, because it turns out our perception of this is driven by where we are located and by our access to information. So one of the hardest things has been to communicate with people who maybe either live in a different location or aren't paying attention maybe to the details that maybe you and I are listening to every day. So it seems like we're having a different experience of this pandemic, a different experience of all the strife that's going on in the country, even if the political strife, whatever it may be, related to the pandemic. We have a different experience of it based on whether or not we're paying attention and where it is we are living. So what's been hardest for me is trying to find common ground to even have conversations about this, because the experience is so different for each person. Probably the best thing about it has been, though, that, you know, I had a career, long career working cold case homicides. And so now I'm in a phase of my life which is really focused on ministry, but it's not a necessary part of my life. I don't have to do this. I get to do this. And so when I've got 3 months home with my best friend, who's awful fun to live with, I feel like this is great. You know, I mean, so the best part has been that Susie and I have had a lot of time just to hang out and do the stuff we did for 40 years before this, but now we get a chance to do it more robustly because my speaking calendar obviously was all canceled. So I'm now home a lot more. So there's a kind of an upside to it as well. But those are probably the challenges and the bright spots.
What's something small that has brought you joy during going just through the lockdown where you are, which I think is in California?
Yeah, it's different here, right? Because we haven't had the same level of severity that maybe other places have had. So some of the bright spots have just been, you know, all the trails have still been open for us, and we run trails three days a week. And so we've gotten more time to go out and run the trails. And what we're seeing is that before this pandemic, we were like the only ones on the trails sometimes. You know, if you're out there running at 6:30 in the morning on a Friday, who else is out there but you? But now what we see is just tons of families that are bored to death. They want to get outside and do something. And so I see this resurgence of family time outside, which I'm telling you was never the case. It is packed now on these remote trails where you have to cross several streams as you're running. At every crossing, there's families playing. And, you know, it's like, wow, this is kind of like we step back in time. It's pretty cool.
Well, one of the things that has been characteristic for people who have had access, and maybe even if you haven't had access to the news, you know, you've experienced it. And that has been a lot of talk from parents about suddenly going from sending their kids to school to now homeschooling or doing distance learning, whether it's kindergartners all the way through college students, and especially for the kids who find themselves in the Gen Z generation in middle school, high school, and college. Right now, it's been a time of disappointment. I mean, they had canceled proms and, you know, senior trips and internships that they were going to do this summer, and job offers that might have been rescinded. And so there's a sense for some of these kids that are part of Christian families as they look around, and they are feeling very discouraged and kind of just out of sorts. What's going to happen next for them? And I know that you have written some for this generation, and I just wanted to invite you on and to ask you to encourage the kids and the parents who are parenting Gen Z students.
Yeah, and Sean McDowell and I wrote a book called So the Next Generation Will Know, and we're really just talking about Gen Z. And a lot of the study we did of Gen Z came out of our own experience as youth pastors. I youth pastored for a number of years, and as educators, we also are on faculty at Summit Worldview. So we get a chance to be with high schoolers a lot and talk to them every year and every session. So you learn some things. And what's really interesting is there's a way in which the coronavirus lockdown has amplified something that was going on before. And that is that for a generation that has more instantaneous, spontaneous access to their friends by way of social media, right? Because they can just flip on social media, they're talking on Snapchat, they're constantly in communication with each other. This is a generation that reports itself being one of the most lonely generations to come down the pike. They will self-report a sense of loneliness that other generations don't report, even though they have more access to their friends than ever before. And why is that? Because this access they have is not physical. It is digital. It is not real in the sense that it is, you're in the physical presence of other people. And isn't it interesting? One of those great senses of loss that young people feel is, again, their lack of ability to be in a group setting to experience a dance, to experience prom, to experience a graduation, to be physically present with each other at a college. That may not happen for them in the fall. And so it exposes a reality that I think the Christian worldview explains better than any other worldview. And here's what I mean by that. You know, in our worldview, we will die and we will be in the presence of God. But we will be more than soulish creatures. We will be more than just spirits. We will be eventually reunited with a resurrection body. Well, why? Why do we need a body after we die? Couldn't we just exist with God spiritually, without immaterially, without a body? What is so important about the body? Well, it turns out we know the body is important, because that's why all these students are feeling a sense of loss, because they cannot be in the bodily presence of other bodies. And that's really fascinating to me, because the Christian worldview demonstrates that, yes, you are more than just a digital connection, a spiritual connection. That's an aspect of who you are, but you have a physical aspect as well. And unless you exercise that, unless you engage that, unless you experience that, you will have a sense of loneliness. Even though you can be on FaceTime with somebody, you can be alone. And it's because the Christian worldview has a very high regard for your body. Nancy Piercy wrote a book on this, right? Talking most recently about how we ought to love the body that God has given us. And it's interesting to me that that is borne out in the statistics related to loneliness in young people. So yeah, what is the hope? Well, it turns out that the people they probably still are engaged with in the physical presence of are their family members, are us as their parents. And that's where I think we have to step in the gap, right? Because we talk about this in the book. The surest way to influence any generation is to combine relationships with truth claims. It's not enough to give your kid a book to teach them something. It's when you can sit down and have a deep conversation with your kids about issues that you actually have an impact on them, because it's the combination of your relationship with them and your ability to master the truth claim. Those two things together are the most persuasive. So as an apologist, somebody who makes the case for Christianity, it's really tempting to focus on the evidence and minimize relationships and relational experiences, right? We're all about the evidence, right? But the reality of it is, it's a both and, it's not an either or. So I think the hope that I have for us going forward as parents is that when we recognize that even though they have all these digital connections, they still value the physical connections they have with us as their parents, even though in those seasons where they may not be voicing that, right? We still have a huge impact on our kids because we're now in that one weird time in history when we're probably more than likely the only physical connection they have in their relationships is with us as their parents.
And I think that's something that has been kind of an unusual gift for parents during this time, that kids, of course, you know, they have been at home and on digital stuff a lot because they've had to do that for school and everything else. And I think this has been kind of a gift where they've realized, hey, there's something too, like you were saying, not just talking to my friends or texting them, you know, on a social media, Instagram or whatever, but it's actually seeing them in person. I thought it was really interesting. I was taking my teenager to sports practice this morning, and usually in the summer, hardly anyone shows up, but all these kids who don't normally show up, I mean, everybody showed up because they haven't been around everyone for the last 3 months and they miss seeing their friends, and it's all the different grades doing this sport, not just one grade. So you could do other people. But anyway, I'm really glad that you said that because that's a way that parents can be encouraged that something positive has come out of that. Is there something else that you would say to parents to equip them to encourage their kids as they kind of feel like they've are floundering with not knowing what the future holds and feeling a little bit, you know, disconcerted or not having as much hope for the future because everything seems so just on pause?
Yeah, I think that part of it is that we, even though we are Christians, we hold a relatively non-theistic view of life. In other words, as an atheist, I was somebody who believed that all of life was just a line segment, right? It starts at a point called birth. It ends at a point called death. You hope that line is as long as it can be. If it's, you know, 80 years, great. If it's 90, even better. If I can get to 100 years, this is fantastic, right? Because I want a long line segment. The problem, of course, is that a lot of bad stuff happens in that line segment. And for a lot of us, almost all of us are going to experience something that's painful. And so that can destroy our view of the line segment, especially if I got sick at 40 and had cancer and struggled for 10 years and then died at 50, I would see evil in that line segment. But that is an atheist view. That's not the Christian view of life. If you know your geometry, a Christian view is not a line segment. It's a ray. It starts at a point called birth, extends to the point called death, but then goes through that point into eternity, into infinitely. And so this, it's a ray that starts at a point, goes through another point, and continues infinitely. And that ray view of life is a Christian view of life that says that, yeah, look, your life is not limited to the 90 years. As a matter of fact, there's stuff that happened to you in the first year of life that was probably pretty, you know, for some people, they had major surgeries, had a heart valve replaced or repaired while they were a baby. But by the time they're five, they don't know anything about it. It's already in their rearview mirror. It's been 4 years ago. I mean, I don't even know anything about it. Certainly by the time they're 60, who even thinks about such things? Well, look, if our view of life is correct as Christians, that 90-year part of the ray is like a millisecond compared to eternity after the second point. So in other words, if I'm 150 years into eternity, well, then the 90 years is only half my, a little less than half my life. If I am, let's say, a million years into eternity, well, now that 90 years is a millisecond compared to the other part of my life. It turns out that hope for us, it comes in remembering that this is not all of it, that no matter what happens to you this year, well, look, if you're 18 or 17 and you're having a bad senior year, you know, you're going to be 27 at some point 10 years from now, and it's not going to be such a big deal. But if the Christian worldview is right, in eternity, whatever happened to you in the year 17 is not going to matter if you navigate it well. It's our hope is not in God is going to make this life, this temporal life on earth, pleasant for us, because God cares far more about your character than your comfort. It's the promise that God has given us eternity. And on the other side of the second dot, there is no sadness. There is no sorrow. There are no tears. In eternity with God, there'll be nothing but bliss in the presence of God. And that's what the promise is, that if we find yourself lamenting how lame this last year was, remember that you've got your geometry on your life is wrong. It's not a line segment. It's a ray under Christianity. And the hope lies largely on the other side of the second point.
Well, that's a good word. And that's a good word to parents too, because, you know, a lot of times we put stock in, maybe we wouldn't intellectually say that we do, but, you know, certain plans or hopes or dreams that we had for our kids, and maybe they got into their dream school and what their college experience is going to be so much different. And it helps us to know too, like, how are we prioritizing what really matters in life. So that's a good word for parents too. Well, finally, I want to ask you some fun rapid fire questions I've had about the pandemic for some of our authors. And the first one is, of course, now we're seeing toilet paper more in the stores than it was available before. But in your house, do you hang your toilet paper going forward or going backwards?
It's backwards. It got to be backwards. It's always
You're not over, you're under?
Yes. I don't know wow. what I thought about it, but that's true. Yeah, now that I think about it, that's how it hangs. Maybe that's my wife's doing. I don't know.
And I think we're eating a lot of food when we've been in more. So have you guys turned to comfort food, or have you been doing a lot of takeout to help businesses in your area? Or are you trying to eat really healthy now that you're at home and have more time to cook maybe?
Well, I wish I could say we were eating healthier, but I do intermittent fast, so I don't eat till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day. And so you have a tendency to be, that first meal is important to you. So, but for our time right now in the pandemic, we've become soup makers. So we've made about every version of soup you can make, and it's just the two of us here. So we kind of have the illusion that this might be somehow healthier, but the reality is it's probably not, because but you wait till 1 o'clock, you're going to make that first meal probably a little bit larger than it needs to be.
Well, thanks, Jim, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been J. Warner Wallace, who is the author of Cold Case Christianity, God's Crime Scene, and Forensic Faith. Thank you for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.